This is a meeting where all of you are going to share ideas and hear a few of my ideas on what it is to be a minister. But we'll begin that when our other two friends get here and have passed. And meanwhile, it would be kind of interesting if each one of you were to bare your soul as to what you think, yes, as to what you think a minister is, what you think you would be as a minister. Now, Richard, let's start with you. What do you think being a minister for you means?
For me, it means living what I'm trying to teach.
It is what you're trying to teach?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And what are you trying to teach?
Who knows?
Hmm? What are you trying to teach?
People to raise them up from wherever the what's that they're on and raise them up to the higher level,
mm-hmm.
so that they can understand, become more and aware of who they really are.
Very good. Okay.
Now, I'm trying to live that at the same time and teach it. And
that's ideal.
Yeah, that's mm-hmm. what I'm trying to do.
To live it and teach it at the same time.
It may need some more work, so I don't know.
Super. And that is the essence of what you feel is the reason you'd like to, that you are a minister, because you certainly already are one, right?
Apparently I've been one all my life. Even when
I think that's the most beautiful statement that probably will be made tonight. All of us have been a minister all of our life, and apparently we haven't known it. And that's beautiful, because that's the truth. You've been a minister all your life to yourself and to your world, and that's super. Anybody else want to top that? No, but from
that's
your own
kind of
from your own point of view, from your own point of view, what is it, Pam? Let's get you. Well, we'll finish with you.
Yeah.
Okay.
Hi, I'm Pino, and I think I'm a minister of God.
You're a minister of
God.
And where is God? I'm not hearing you.
God is everything.
God is everything. Well, that's for very sure. That's for sure. And you're a minister of everything. That's super.
Not the negative.
Yeah, you can't go wrong. You can't go wrong. Because everything goes according to your vibrations, doesn't it? That's great. And how have you been succeeding so far?
Well, I'm told I'm the official scribe, so I expect to be doing a lot of writing.
You're going to have further recognitions of your talent, huh?
Apparently.
No, not apparently. I mean, have you earned it? Have you taken the program?
You mean the minister's program?
Yeah.
Yes.
A long time ago, right? Yeah. So, you see, you've been doing it a long time. Now, when the world doesn't recognize that you're a minister and just sees the most fabulous Christ child in the world, then you know you've made it. Which is what we'd all like to do. No, you're living it, right? That's beautiful. Any other comment as to how you're living it?
I've been looking forward to April 2nd.
He's being fully ordained.
Mm-hmm.
April 2nd.
Mm-hmm. And can it ever get better than the allness?
I think it's already begun.
It's already begun, yeah. It's already there. Super. Any other comment?
That's enough for
now. Okay, Saraya, what have you experienced being a minister? Or why do you anticipate being a minister? Either way.
To me, it's learning to turn 180 degrees and face God again, rather than letting people walk with their back to it. Just to move them around very gently, letting them see that they are everything that is.
And you walk in the present, in the now. Mm-hmm.
All I do is just try and make them see that there's more. Let them feel me, it's allowing them to see that they vibrate at a much higher level than originally, that they open themselves to.
And it all stems from your vibrations.
Well, I'm
only able to No. I'm going to say this one time this evening, and if you don't take advantage of it, that's your problem. I would not like to attend your church, because I wouldn't be able to hear what you're saying. And I can hear me, and I can hear all of you talk when you talk, and I can hear you say, "Jimmy, get in the house before I give you a spanking." You know, I can hear that very clearly. But when you speak unsure of yourself, like the little child, "I think I did the right thing. Didn't I do the right thing?" You know, and you just sort of wind it into yourself. You say you want to be a minister, and a minister projects. I have spoken about this before. I said, when you give a meditation, give the meditation for the people who are there so they can hear it. Now let us close our eyes and listen within. Now let us close our eyes and listen within. I mean, nobody can hear it. Nobody can hear the whisper. And you are not paid to be a whisperer. A horse whisperer, maybe, but not a people whisperer. Maybe that too, but that's in another book. So, please, when you speak, speak up clearly, speak up very firmly, speak up as though you have a son of a bitch in conviction. You have a conviction. I say, God saves souls. God loves us. Didn't you ever hear of Billy Graham? My goodness sakes, he rocks the hall. He doesn't say, "Now let us all be quiet and let us all listen." You know what I mean? When Billy Graham howls, the audience yells, you know, and this is not necessarily what you want to be. But I want to tell you a little story. There was a guy, he was a young man, he was in his 30s, just starting out with his work, and he went off to the hills, and 5,000 people joined around him. And he spoke to the 5,000, and every one of the 5,000, the farthest reaches of the room, of the hall, of the hills, of the mountains, could hear him as well as the closest. You understand? Now, if he did not speak so everyone could hear, there'd be no benefit to it. Girls, we're priming the plate for you now. We're getting everyone to speak up so that you can all be heard beautifully and powerfully and wonderfully. But do you understand what I'm saying? This is not meant to be a put-down for anybody, because you're all expressing deep humility and deep respect for being ministers, and you're expressing deep respect for yourself, too. But you are in a group, and in the group wants to hear, and the group wants to be heard. Now, we would not have the Sermon on the Mount today if Jesus whispered to the front row. Because you know what the front row were doing? The front row were considering everybody was hungry. And they were looking around and see what needs to be done. All those disciples, you know. They were just concerned. Interesting. Okay, now, did you want to start again? Or suffice it that you've said what you did. Okay. All right.
It was loud enough, you heard it.
What's that?
It was loud enough, you heard it.
You said it loud enough, I heard it. Well, that's good. Now, I am not saying this for me, because I really don't care what any of you say. I mean, none of you can say to me what the divine in me says to me. The divine in me says to me all the wonderful things I could ever want to hear. And then it says to me, shout it to the hilltops. Tell it to the mountains. Sing it out and let all the world listen if they wish. But sing it loud and sing it beautiful. Can you imagine the judge sitting at his bench and saying, no, you're guilty, you're going to jail. He doesn't say it. He says, you're guilty as charged and you're going to jail.
Is that how you do it, Jane?
Or,
can you hear me in the bathroom?
But you see, this is the point. He has made a conviction. He has made a statement which has power. And I want each one of you to make statements that have power, that carry your word as a minister into wherever it goes. Wherever it goes. Now, what about you? What has drawn you into the field of the ministry?
Well, after hearing your little speech, I feel like getting up in the center of the room and just...
Wow, go for it. Go for it.
I'm being a minister because, like Richard, I've always been a minister. I
super.
Minister little children, I minister elders, I minister everyone I come across. And it is my divine grace, my divine light, and my divine being, and it's what I am chosen to do in this lifetime, as many others, and I'm here to do it again. And keep going. And I love you all.
Now, you are a pain in the neck. No, you are. Everybody thinks you're a pain in the neck because they wish they had done it. They wish they had gotten up with the same confidence and spoken with the same enthusiasm. And you see, when you are a free spirit, you don't care what other people say. Now, who would ever wear to a minister's meeting pink socks? You know?
Oh, shoes.
Me. You? Ellen had a couple of these socks, white, pink, and blue, and so forth, and she says she didn't like them, so I took them. And they kept me just fine. And I enjoyed them. Now, you know, and I said to the princess here, I said, shall I change? This is my driving clothes. I just drove over comfortably from San Diego. She said, oh, no, no, anything goes, you know. Well, here I am, anything going. But I don't care. I am not dressing for you. When I dress for myself. When I speak for myself. When I listen for myself. And I think each one of you all are very important, and I would like to hear very nicely what you have to say. Now, I have a pair of hearing aids. And I can put the hearing aids on, and I can hear every single one of you like you're whispering. I can hear you right out of your sleep. But I, like Ray, because you have those things in your ears, you can hear clearly. You can also hear yourself clearly, and so then you speak lower. And so I'd be speaking like this, and I'd be talking to you like this, and telling you these things, and you wouldn't be hearing. And I am here for you, not for me. I'm here for me. I'm here to share with you these thoughts and these ideas. Okay, now that was a good start. Okay, sir? Why are you being drawn? Why are you being drawn into the ministry? What do you think? What do you think you're gonna do for the world?
Me personally.
Ha ha ha! I like that.
I've always been a minister. Each and every person on the planet in the universe is actually a minister, whether or not they know it or not. But I'm taking the steps to show God how to be God.
Beautiful.
Okay.
Cool.
And helping people in any way possible. That includes the neighbor on the streets, the person who is ill or homeless, helping them in any way possible. As long as I feel that I am giving from my heart, 100% totally, without any ego, any ill will, then I feel that I'm doing my job here. So, that's why I'm here.
And you're going to be a success, right?
Yes, I am.
He's already a success.
I wanted him to say that. And you're going to be a success. I am a success.
I am a success.
Right. Super. Don't answer that question.
I'll be good little guy.
I have all these women at campus, and they speak different languages. And so I ask one a question, and I want them to answer because I want to know they know what I'm saying. And so everybody else answers it. Now, how do I know she knows, you know? She's got to answer it. But you're great. Okay, sir. Here comes another magic.
Stephen, I know I've mentioned before. I'm about to be ordained. And I don't know what that is. It's to me at this moment, and what I'm thinking is just like a job title, like for Christ. I don't know what it is. You're welcome to come along and find out with me.
Is it going to be a fun journey?
Don't trust in me. Trust yourself.
I think it's going to be a fun journey. Because you are not a fool. And I don't think you would take any journey that wasn't fun. Any journey you take in life is a ball. And you're making it all the more fun. Yes. You would put on that serious exterior, but that's not the real you. The real you is that giggle hunter, you know. Yeah, the giggle hunter.
I didn't tell him.
Yeah, I know. Okay. Now, Miss Fantastic, what... feel accept five from everybody, won't you? Wonderful. Wonderful.
I just have to say, I'm God. God I am.
Super.
Yay. And I want to see God through my eyes, and God looking back at me. I want to know God through the things I say, through the things I do, through the things I see, through the things that come back to me. I want to reflect God's love in everything I do.
No, let's take that word want off. I reflect.
I reflect God in me.
I don't
everything
want to.
I do.
I reflect. Let's go.
I reflect God in me.
Yeah.
Everything I do, everything I say, everything I see.
Super.
And it reflects back to me.
Super. Because?
I am God.
Naturally.
God I am.
It's a nice way to conclude. That's super. And I must say, you were very clear. You're very understandable. And you're not going to miss your audience.
I wasn't.
She doesn't.
Very good. Okay, here we go.
Do I have to get up?
Now, hey, this is your show.
Okay, I'm going to get up. I'm just going to let everybody else then. My name is Carol, and I am a minister, and have been a minister all my life. I minister to everyone I meet. I know that I am God. God lives within me, is me. And I try to, I radiate that to everyone I meet. No one understands what it is, but they want what I have. So they ask me what it is. So I have a chance to share with them. Not in terms of a church setting, but in layman's terms, but it's same energy. I believe that you can minister to people, you can show God they are God without preaching. And that's what I do as a minister.
How would you preach God?
By being.
No. You said without preaching.
Preaching in a sense where you have a pulpit. Formal teaching.
I see.
I'm more of a man on the street type preacher.
Yes.
Yeah. And more of preaching the joy of being a child of God and being God rather than having a fear of God, but the presence of God being a positive force, being a force that you radiate out to other people without even saying anything about it, and that attracts people to you so that you can share that information so that they know it too. They can start to know.
We use the phrase, a master knows another master. Only a master knows another master. So you're knowing other spiritually illumined masters in your world because you are one.
Yes.
Powerful. Good.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Anything else? I'm sure you could stay for a couple hours if you wanted to.
Yeah, I can go on and on. Everybody knows that.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you. All right, Gavel Man.
Gavel Man. Powell Tools.
his. I'm used to pronouncing my judgment. And I am God experienced himself as Jew. And my job here, I came here to be the vehicle for God's love to all that I come into contact with. I am here to be such a wonderful mirror of to those around me that when people look at me, they can see themselves in the, they can see their God selves in the reflection of me. That's good enough.
That's it, huh? Well, do you think you could top that? Do you think that really says exactly what you need to say?
From right here, right now, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It says exactly what I need to say.
And why is it that you feel that you could put it together so clearly and so concisely like that?
Because I'm a word master, that's what I do.
Well,
if
I
stop, for
sure.
If I train, I'm a word master. That's right. I am.
Yeah, you're a word master, but the thing is, you're more than a word master.
That is true, much more than a word master.
Yeah, much more. What you are is an expression of the divine within you, outwardly, and so everywhere you look, you see the beauty in the world. And you do not see a world that needs to be improved, because you see it perfect. You do not see a person who needs to be improved, you see them perfect. You do not see circumstances that need improving, you see them perfect. You do not see yourself, or your wife, or your life, or your health, or your wealth, or your world in any way needing improvement. You merely see it done, because that's the way you as Jesus, you as God, see these things done.
And it is perfect.
Mm-hmm. And that's true. That's true for all of us. That's true for all. And we sometimes forget that. And they sing this very interesting song. Were you there when they crucified my Lord? What do you mean, were you there? You were hanging on the cross. You were Jesus. You were the guys who were hung on the cross. You were Paul, hiding in the back hall. You know? You were all these people that were there in biblical times, because you were all. And you were there. And it was a game you played. Okay, now what did you learn from it? You learned to do like Jesus did. You learned to say, I am God. Just like Carol said, like all of you are saying, I am God. And living it. And expecting everybody else, not expecting, but knowing that they're your reflection. That's great. Yes. Nothing. Good. You're coming later. Yes.
I'm Reverend Lori, and I'm glad to be your minister. And I minister every day from the time I stand on the ground to the time I put my head on my pillow. And that's all I have to say.
But are you a good minister?
Yes.
Are you a minister people like to listen to?
I don't care.
Are you a minister that places your hand on people and instantly they're healed?
If you want to be.
Who else said that?
Just about anybody who believes.
No,
Jesus.
He said it's done unto you according to your belief. Remember that?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now, that's a pretty good reference, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
It's not the reference, but it's a pretty good one.
Mm-hmm.
It's done unto you according to your belief. Now, let's take that a step further, Lori.
Sure.
Do you believe in healing?
Of course I do.
Do you believe that healing takes place, or it already is?
It already is.
All right. Then if you believe that healing already is, then there's not something that is going to happen to a person. They're going to realize that they already experienced that.
That's correct.
And so when you put your hand on their head, you are giving them your vibrations of love, guiding them to reveal that which they already are.
Yeah, it helps them to realize something.
Yeah, help them to realize it. Now, powerful, huh? Okay, that's super duper. They've come almost in time, didn't they? Okay. Now, did you have anything further?
No.
Okay.
Let's give her a
hand. Now, what is it you would like to be as a minister? Why do you want to be a minister? Or maybe that you already are one, and how do you demonstrate that?
Hello.
Hi.
I don't want to be a minister.
Well, I'm sorry. There's no choice here.
Okay.
You've been that from birth.
All right.
But you don't want to be an out-practicing minister.
That's why I say I don't want to be. It already is.
Yeah.
I don't think any aspect of God that's living isn't ministering.
That's for sure.
So the title isn't necessary. It's just being alive is ministering on earth. So I don't want to be one. I know that I already am. And if it's digging in my garden, that's good enough for me. If someone shows up and they have something to share, my job is to be present to that. And from that point on, I got to ask the Holy Spirit what it wants to speak or say through me or do through me. It's none of my business what comes out of me. It's
let it flow.
Staying present is my only act that I need to stay on top of doing. And it's totally selfish because my goal is to return to innocence. I want to be innocent here.
And that's beautiful.
And I see everything here as much as possible as harmless. So I don't want to be a minister. I already know that's my job title or whatever, but being present and loving is the only thing I know to do.
Have you ever heard people protest, I don't want a new car, I don't want a new husband, I don't want a new a wife, I don't want these things, and dream, next thing you know, they got it. But I like people who protest, because the people who protest are the ones who are so wide open to it, it just floods into their life beautifully. So, you're playing the game, interestingly.
Yeah.
That's good, that's good. Okay. Why do you want to be a minister, or why are you a minister, or if you're not a minister, what difference does it make?
I'm officially ordained. I guess, Herb, trying to think of how to answer you, and a lot of it has to do with a lot of what people have already said, but sitting here thinking, it's like I'm a flower, I'm unfolding, I am growing, and I grow by what I do and what I learn and how I help other people as well, and I help myself as well. It's a process of growing and continuing. And it's being wherever I am, wherever there's opportunity to maybe even just smile at somebody or say a kind word to someone.
Now, why are you inspired to smile, say a kind word, or do something beneficial to others?
I feel very good about my day. I feel very good about where I am. I feel very good because I am God.
Because that's who
I
you am. Are, right?
Yes.
That's who you are.
Yes.
You see, a person who runs around with a smile on their face, that's who they are. And so people are not surprised when they see people with a smile on their face who have a smile on their face. So when people have a smile on their face, who aren't used to having a smile on their face, then that's kind of unusual, you know.
And Herb, laughter. I'm learning that laughter is just wonderful medicine for everything. It's just great. It's just
great. We do a lot of that, huh?
Yes, we do. And more and more, laughter.
Yeah, yeah.
It helps a lot.
I spent 2 weeks with a lady in Switzerland, and one of the primary things I worked with her on was laughter, to reaffirm her belief in herself and in living. And by the time I got done, she was dressed and at the breakfast table, the lunch table, the dinner table. She was having a new lease on life and just deciding what she wanted to do, not feeling sorry for herself, but feeling glad for herself. Now, she may die. And she may live. All those are her choices.
Yeah.
But my choice was to go there and share my love and laughter and joy and sparkle her life, which I did. And that's great, huh?
It is.
That's great. You know, it's just like Robert Schuller. You all know the Golden Crystal Cathedral in Anaheim. Well, Robert Schuller and Reverend Ike and Billy Graham and all these guys are programmers, you know. They're theatrical people, and they have all these movie stars and movie actors coming in and talking, and they have these orchestras playing, and they have all of this folderol. But you know, he even gives a message, and people listen to him. With all that confusion going on, he gives a message, and people listen to him. And the message is to believe in yourself and to be a minister yourself. That's great. So you're like a Robert Schuller, aren't you?
I read his books, actually.
Yeah. Fantastic. Okay. You have anything else to add?
No.
Okay. Now, madam.
I'm God. I am Spirit. I am here to walk the path that I'm on, which is to give and receive unconditional love on a daily basis, and just keep walking my path. I'm not a talker. I'm a doer. And now, that's what I'm here to do.
Do you know what she said? She said one word which absolved her of everything. And that word is unconditional love. She said, she gives unconditional love. Now, can we all say that that's what we do in our ministry, is to give unconditional love? Wow. If that's what we do, expecting nothing back, just giving it out, just being ourselves, and if people listen, wonderful. And if people don't listen, wonderful. I even have a little red nose. And I sometimes wear that when I go to see people who are dying in the hospital. I say, well, you want to live or you want to die? Hey, this is not a funny business. Well, it sure is. Try laughing at it, you know. And I get them laughing. And pretty soon they say, I want to live. Cool, you know. But that's great. That's you. Unconditional love. You're fantastic.
Thank you.
And that's it.
That's it.
Super. Now, okay.
Same as her. I want to be a minister of love. I want to go out and spread love to everyone in the world and watch it just go all the way around. Like she said, unconditional love. Just see that blooming flower that no matter where you go, that there's no fighting, no harm going on in the world, but everyone loves everyone.
And now there's peace on earth, and it began with you.
Right.
Super.
And everyone else.
Super. Super.
That's actually my favorite song since I was a little girl.
And how do you give it out? With the UCL?
Just loving everyone.
Unconditional love?
Unconditional love.
Yeah. Can you love the terrorists?
Oh, yes, I can. I can love the misguided. I can love racists. I can love everybody.
Right. And how about yourself?
I'm loving me too.
That's number one, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Definitely.
But now, she started to do something that a lot of you were doing. Well, how can I follow her? I mean, you know, she said it so beautifully. What can I say? Hey, we're not asking you to listen to what she said. Yes, listen to what she said. But what turns you on? What little phrases turn you on? We have a woman in Estonia, and she wants to take the University of Healing program, and she wants to affiliate her church with the University of Healing. And I wrote back to her, and I said, under one condition, you have to agree to be yourself and have fun. Be yourself and have fun. If you are not going to be yourself and have fun, you cannot affiliate with us, because you got to be yourself and have fun to affiliate with us. Does that sound good? Yeah, be yourself and have fun. And who knows what that self is and that fun is. But for one thing, it's all good and very good. Good, you had some good points there. Okay, I'm sorry I didn't bring my dog along, but next time I'll bring my golden retriever, and you can look at him and say, wow, how do you keep a golden retriever in such perfect health, in such perfect mental health, in such perfect loving health? How do you do it?
Because you're God and you create.
It's a reflection, huh? Mm-hmm. And sir, your reason for being a minister and for ministering, or wanting to, or being it already, what is your condition? How pregnant are you?
Multiple times around.
Full time.
For me, as I minister and share love, I also teach myself.
Now, you missed it when that we started out with them. I said, you have to speak up. So your congregation can hear you, and so the people can be enthralled by you. Now, as I say, Billy Graham, when he gets up there, he says, and the road to heaven is paved with gold, and the road to hell, oh boy, you know, he really makes people, you know. So I'm not asking you to do that, but just speak up so that you are clearly heard by all of us.
For me, when I minister, I'm also teaching myself about love, how to love, express love, not just one-on-one, but also through the animals to their owners, trying to awaken the owner through the animal in some cases to recognize what true unconditional love is, where the animals express that continuously, trying to open that seed of awareness. But as I minister, I'm also perfecting myself along my journey, along my path. It's all done in love, no judgments, no strings attached. It's just give. And as I give, I receive. It may not be in monetary or materialistic terms, but just the love given back satisfies me. And I see perfection in all that I do. And you ask, can you love terrorists? Why? I was given some ridicule here about a year and a half ago because I said I could love Hitler. Not for what he did, but for who he is.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. But for who he is.
Mm-hmm.
So as I go forth on my path, it is love, expressing love, both through the animals as well as to the people, and trying just to make people more aware of the love that is surrounding them all the time.
Mm-hmm. Fantastic. Good start. You notice I said start. Very good start. And you keep it up in that pathway, and you'll have wonderful experiences. And you already are. Yes. All right, any more?
That's enough for now.
That's enough. How about you?
Well, he took half of what I was going to say.
No. I said, and I have to hear it from your mouth.
I know,
because
I know.
In your words, it's going to sound totally different than it is in his.
Okay. I was guided down this path, so I'm following my guides in my path.
Fantastic.
And I'm loving it. It's wonderful. And I'm learning who and what I am. And as I do, I can share that with others and hopefully reflect that in the other people. But also, one of my main paths and goals is through the animals, learning to communicate with them and share that with the people and share the lessons that the animals are here to teach us. And one of the main ones is unconditional love. I spent all day with a sick dog today, and when the owner came in and held him in his arms, I saw so much love exchanged between them. It just made me feel so good to see that and be a part of that.
Mm-hmm.
And that makes it all worthwhile right there. So just making the owners more aware of what the animals have to say, making their lives better, more comfortable, keeping them healthy.
Is that a ministration too?
Yes, it is.
Very much so.
Yes, it is.
Now, do you think that you got the biggest lesson out of that dog master sharing situation? Oh my goodness. You know, we can all feel it. We can all feel it. Because it was so precious.
So precious. And after spending all day keeping this dog alive,
yeah.
Being part of keeping him alive. But yeah, that was very.
Ministering to him.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful.
I told that dog, you're not dying today. This is not your day. You're waiting to die. Not now.
And that
not
is
now.
True. And that is true.
Not now.
That
not
is
your
true.
Time.
For human beings, too. For human beings, too.
Yeah. So you have too much love to share, so you just hang on.
You're loved here with all our heart. Yeah. Beautiful. Anything further? Good start. Okay, why are you interested in the ministry?
Well, to begin with, I wasn't.
You what?
I wasn't.
You wasn't?
I didn't want a certificate. But I believe in growing. I came to learn about love. I have ministered to children, to adults, to senior citizens, which I am not one, supposedly. I want everybody to hear that word, supposedly. I've always been interested in my past. From the time I was a little girl, I knew I was on a certain path. But recently I learned that I didn't become who I am because of, or in spite of, but because of what the lessons I learned.
Because of?
Yes, because. And that the last couple of days that's been so strong with me, you're not who you are in spite of, because of what they did. I am because of the lessons I learned. And that means all the world to me. It's a big giver. And how I'm looking.
They meant it for evil and God meant it for good sort of thing, huh?
Yes.
Hmm. How lately we come into the awareness of that, huh?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
That's my
age. Uh-huh. It's always been there.
I just didn't see it.
No, you weren't ready to benefit from it. Now you are.
I was ordained at the Heart Hospital.
In where?
The Heart Hospital here in Tucson, mm-hmm. last July. Reverend Pamela and I talked. I didn't want that certificate. I wanted to just be a deacon. And that's what I was very happy being. And then we talked, and my guides came to me and said, I thought you were here to grow and to learn lessons. And I said, I am. Well, this is the next step. So I am now in the next step of my life. What happens, where I go, I have no idea. But I'm willing to follow.
Isn't it an exciting journey?
Yes, because I don't know what's ahead of me.
And nobody does.
No.
We do, but we haven't listened.
Well, I'm the kind of person who likes to know exactly where I'm going and how long it's going to take for me to get there. And this I cannot do.
You have eternity, you know.
I have it all planned.
Eternity, you got all planned? Cool. Beautiful.
Yes. I'm learning, and I really believe I came back to learn what unconditional love was. Love that I've always felt was missing from my life, and through the people here, and especially the leader, I have found out what unconditional love is. And I'm beginning to be able to see beyond the physical.
Mm-hmm.
And that to me is very, very important, because that's what I am. I'm not the physical. I am beyond it.
Well, you see, each one of you now who have expressed yourself, except for this princess here, each one of you who has expressed yourself has shown what talent you have. Your ability to think on your feet, to let the divine in you reveal itself through you without having any preparation, you think. You've had billions of years of preparation, you know, and you're merely being the channel now for that inner wisdom, that inner genius, that inner divine self, the God in you, to flow. And Reverend Pallon has been working with you on helping you to open that door, to let it go. And sometimes it takes a lot of humility on her part, because she sees you right next to going through and being fabulous, and then you huck her behind the door, afraid to move out because somebody might not think kindly of you. Someone might make some untoward remark, some unkind remark, and then and you cry and you whimper and just like you know. And it's a stupid thing to do, but we do it because we have done something that we haven't noticed. The master teacher said, you must become as little children to enter into the kingdom of heaven. Not that you must become diapers, you know, and stuff like that, but you must be the innocence of the little child. And this is what each of you are learning from Pamela. You're learning to let the innocence come through and be that. And even Richard, with all of his association with Pamela and all of his work with her and his work himself as a student, he's not been doing nothing while he was sitting in his office doing the work that he had to do. He had his books there too, you know.
You know, he made his time pay off. But the thing is, what is happening to each of you, and you don't notice it, is that you are becoming an innocent child. And you are becoming so innocent. You should listen to my Mr. Candle talks there on the internet. And a Mr. Candle talk might be like Mr. Candle was talking to one little girl. And he said, why are you crying? And she says, nobody likes me. And he said, well, why do you think nobody likes you? Because nobody likes me. Nobody likes me. And Mr. Candle, the candle sitting on the bedside table. And he says to the little girl, he said, now, well, come, let's go outside. Now, see, there's your brother. Say, hi, Timmy. You're wonderful. I like you. And watch what happens. And she said, hi, Timmy. I like you. And he said, what? I do too. I do too. I do too. I like you too. And then she went up to her mother and she says, mommy, I think I have the most wonderful mommy in the world. I love you. I love you. I love you. And then her mommy looked at her as she was going out the door and said, my goodness sake, I love you too. I love you. Really, I do. And then she went to the girl next door. And she said to the girl next door, Penelope, she said, Penelope, I think you're a wonderful girl. And Penelope hadn't heard a kind word out of this little girl all of her time. And she says, thank you. You're a nice girl too. I like you. Yeah, but come and play, you know. And then she went to Penelope's dog. And she gave the dog a big huggle and a snuggle. And the dog wagged his tail and was so happy. And Mr. Candle said, you see, when you say these things to people, you see what happens? Now, Jacqueline came around the corner just then on her bicycle. And here was this little girl. And Jacqueline was going to ride her bike right into her because Jacqueline always wanted to scare this little girl. And when Jacqueline was here on her bicycle, the little girl looks up at Jacqueline. Jacqueline, I think you're the nicest girl. You are so nice. And Jacqueline stopped her bike and looked at the girl and said, oh, thank you, you know. And so Mr. Candle said, now, can you see? Can you see? Everybody loves you. You just got to show them that you love them. And then they have something to say to you. So, you see, I do it with Mr. Candle. You can do it with yourselves. Because become as a little child. How will a little child act? As a minister, if you were a little child getting up there to give a talk, and you gave it from your heart as a child, don't forget you got billions of years behind you. Mm-hmm. You know, you've got lots of things to draw upon. You're not alone. But as a little child, you're innocent. And you're not looking at appearances. You're just speaking out and ministering unto the world. And that's why Mr. Candle hates doing my talks. They speak on different subjects like this for little children to hear just before they go to bed, just before they go to sleep, before they hug their mommy and daddy and snuggle in for the night. And you see, this is you. You're at this stage now. You're the little child just before you snuggle and huggle in for the night. And you're innocent. And you're sharing with the world your innocence. And what happened to Jacqueline? What? Oh, yeah, I like you too. And she didn't bump her with her bike where she was going to. Now there's peace on earth, and it, what? Began with me. You see, so you, as ministers, as you become the little children that you are, as you become the innocents, everything works out so beautifully for you. Now, we've heard from all of you on why you want to be a minister, and now let's hear from the Reverend herself as to why she thinks being a minister in her own very special way is the most important thing in her life, more than eating, sleeping, drinking, sex, anything else.
He knew we win.
The floor here is Miss Pamela.
Let's give Marvel a big hand.
Oh, yes, yes. You knew it came. Smart lady. Ah, my God. No wonder they have you here.
happy here because I got crazy and went out and did something wonderful.
To me, being a minister is being love, compassion, dedication. Everyone that I see myself. Everyone I touch myself. And I love God, and that means I love everybody.
Now, what is the work a minister is supposed to do?
To serve themselves in the highest level of love, light, honor, and integrity.
Would you like to repeat that so the audience can hear it?
Yes. To love yourself with the highest level of love, light, honor, and integrity.
Is that worth repeating?
Yes. Let's do it together. To love myself in the greatest love of love, light, love, honor, and integrity. Yes.
And so it is.
So it be. Praise the Lord.
Yes.
I love the Lord.
I think that's beautiful. Now, Richard?
I'm prepared for Harmony Grove.
Yeah. Yeah.
Richard, is this true, what Pamela has just said? Have you seen her do these things like that?
I've been with her many years, and she has done a lot of that. Maybe not all at once, but is.
Maybe not all at once, but there. Now, as I see each of you, I have the minister's manual here, and I also have the minister's quiz here, which is we give out to students who are taking the course. Would you like to pass the quiz sheets around, and then what are left over send back to me? I want to go over it with you from one simple point of view, because it has a lot of questions that you are asking as to what a minister and a church are. What is the purpose of a minister in a church? And I would say, number one, be yourself and have fun. And number two, be yourself and have fun. And number three, be yourself and have fun. And aside from that, nothing else matters. Now, if you want to have a choir, if you want to have programs, if you want to have all sorts of things, that's okay. But just be yourself and have fun. If you think that you're going to teach somebody religion or teach somebody a philosophy, then I will offer you this new book that I'm reading right now. What's the title of it?
Jesus something.
Yeah, it's something about...
it was a fancy word that this God didn't understand.
it's about what was going on when Jesus became a minister. And when Jesus became a minister, he did not go to rabbi school. He did not go to rabbi school. Jesus did not go and become ordained by the rabbis to be a rabbi. If you remember, and this is crucial, if you remember, Jesus, you're all done?
Exactly.
Fantastic. I got my copy here. If you remember, how old was Jesus when he was on his way back to his home with his parents and he stopped off at the synagogue? 12 years old? Well, he couldn't have gone through a lot of school up to that time, could he? Yet he was talking about very profound issues with the priests of the temple. Issues that no one else could discuss with them except another rabbi who understands that you can say anything and it doesn't matter. But the thing is, he listened within and he gave that information from within. So you see, there's no school you're going to go to become a rabbi, to become a priest, to become a minister. There's no training that you can ever take. We might give you training to do certain things as a business person or as the techniques of healing that you teach and the techniques of working with people, counseling and so forth. But those are all relative because the counseling techniques that Reverend Pennell teaches you are completely wrong. The counseling techniques that she teaches you are completely wrong. Because every single person you counsel with, you deal with on their individual basis, and everything she tells you, how do I apply it? How do I apply it? You don't. You listen within yourself and you apply it. I had taken a course in journalism in college, and then I had an opportunity to become the editor of the local weekly newspaper in my hometown. And so I went to the dean of the university at Northwestern University in Chicago in journalism, who is my neighbor, and asked him what 4 books I should read on journalism to prepare me for running this weekly newspaper. And he gave me these 4 thick old books, you know. And I had 2 months before I started my job to read them. And I laid on the roof of my apartment and I studied and studied and read and I memorized them. I knew them better. I started my job and nothing applied. Because it was a weekly newspaper. It wasn't a daily. It wasn't a zip, 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 zip. It was a, you know, calm, peaceful, rather relaxed affair. And so everything I learned didn't apply. And I thought my publisher was very stupid for not applying the things, but they didn't belong. And so you, as you do these things that you're learning from Pam, these things that are so beautiful and so wonderful, she was working with you on your level. Now, she inspired you to work with whomever you're working on their level. Because if you tell a little child, supercalifragilisticexpialidocious, he'll say, yeah! And if you say some very highfalutin words out of the psychology and psychiatry books, he'll say, you know, what's that all about? So we speak in the language of those to whom we are speaking. Now, let me give you this. Did you finish saying what you want to say? Okay, good. I wouldn't want to cut you off. Okay, number one here. The minister's manual is prepared for all metaphysically oriented ministers and practitioners. Correct. Because it is designed for that. There are some services that need to be taken out of there because they no longer represent metaphysics as I understand it today. But, hey, I rewrite the book every time I open it, you know, as we all do. So do that. Services of the manual are required of all ministers. Garbage. The services of the manual are guides to all ministers to do whatever they damn please. If you're going to conduct a wedding, and you go to somebody and say, now, I now pronounce you man and wife, you know, and what is it, one of our ministers conducted a service on the beach, and I shouldn't have started the conversation because I forgot the point, but it was about the wedding, and in the wedding he changed it, the male, the groom changed it, where he said, and you will be, you know, until death do us part, and he changed it to something like, and for life eternal, and for our life eternal, and things like that. So you could let them change it. Let them change the weddings. Let them change the ceremonies. But these are basic ceremonies, so they give you something to work with. It's just a format. And if you want to change the whole thing, I've had people change entire ceremonies, and they're just wonderful. Okay. Jesus did not separate the practitioners and the ministers. Did Jesus call his disciples, apostles, ministers? Did he call anyone a minister? Did he call anybody a practitioner? Okay.
That's your word. That's your word.
You notice that. A minister's role is these three. Faith, humility, is fidelity to one's vows and promises. Hope is knowing that which may be unseen and that it does not exist. And charity is love defined as non-judgmental, non-possessive, beneficial, benevolent toward themselves and others as our creation. Am I glad I'm reading this to you now? I'm going to rewrite these. This is a bunch of yesterday.
Let's give him money!
Wow! Yes. Hey, but, you know...
No, he just told us a few minutes ago.
Yeah, you're right. The concept of God and man defines I am God, basically. A practitioner first heals himself relative to the friend and sees the friend experiencing the highest healing. A practitioner first heals himself relative to the friend and then sees the friend experiencing the highest healing. What does that mean?
That he's sick.
The practitioner, what?
Well, it says the practitioner first heals himself. Why does God have to heal himself?
This is from the relative point of view we're talking here.
Oh, okay.
Now, if we want to talk about the absolute, and if we want to talk about God and the absolute, which is the nice thing to talk about, which I love, which I'm teaching, which is the University of Philosophy that we have going now, and the books are out, but I just got to get them done, there's no practitioners. Everything is done. Everything is an is. Everything is a completion. And in fact, it's the most wonderful thing in the world. I ought to just abandon the University of Healing and go right on into that. I've had it for years, but I've written the textbooks, and they're profound, but simple and beautiful. I get excited about my work. Okay. The practitioner is responsible to know local laws governing his ministry. Well, it's the minister who's supposed to know the local laws. But if you violate the local laws with your ministry, then you're in trouble. And you're in trouble because you didn't know them, and you should know them. What laws govern how a minister can do things? Can you have a card in your car that lets you park where you want to park? Can you go into hospitals and see patients with your card that says you are an ordained minister? Yes. But does every hospital recognize it? Yes, if you do. Huh?
They will do. If you come in and say, I'm Reverend.
That's it. If you do. But, hey, I'm a minister. Do you recognize this? No. You say, I'm a minister. I'm here to see my patient there in room so-and-so. And they say, no problem. Stay as long as you like. Mm-hmm. And this is true.
Attentive care doesn't matter.
This is true. Right. And all you have to have is your little card that says that you are an ordained minister of a recognized group.
I've never asked them to see a card. I've never asked to see a card.
Huh? It doesn't even have to be hard. That's true. No, it's just your attitude. Yeah. You walk.
But I'll tell you, it's nice to have that little parking sticker. You pull out the little thing and put the little parking sticker.
That's not bad either. Well, at La Jolla Hospital, they have spots there. It says clergy parking. And I think, why don't I have a clergy card stuck in my window? Because I'm there on business. I'm there to see my friends who are in the hospital for one reason or another, you know. And so,
the clergy store, they cost a buck and more.
Yes. I told Ellen about that, and she told me about it. Now, listen to this man. He's a font of information.
We had him in here when we were doing our minister's class. He came in and gave us all the laws and everything.
Great.
So we were really lucky to have that.
Well, you're blessed.
There's such a thing as patients' rights, and one of their rights is to have a minister or chaplain of their choice come and see them.
Anytime.
So, yes, so that is a right.
Whenever that person is available.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Any time of day or night.
Right. Yes. But I would go visit I had my sister and my brother and my brother-in-law all in the hospital at the same time, in different hospitals in different cities. And so I lived in Campbell, and I had to drive up to Anaheim, to the Veterans Hospital, up to Los Angeles, and, you know, and I kind of make the trip worthwhile. And so I end up seeing them sometimes at 11 o'clock, and sometimes even at 1 o'clock. And I go in, and I see them. What are you doing here at this time of morning? Hey, be glad I'm here. Be glad I'm here. I made that on the tour here. Otherwise, I wouldn't be here. Well, but who else has been here to see you? Nobody? You got a problem? You know? You got a problem? They don't have a problem. But just be sure. I just went to the, I just walked right in. And they said, I said, where is Ray Barley? And they said, he's room so-and-so. And I said, thank you. And I walked right up. You're what? I'm his clergy. I'm his minister. I'm his brother, too. But I'm his brother. he's not heavy father. So I'm the clergy, you know, and that's what it is. And that's beautiful. But you see, you have to be, what did we say before? Speak with conviction.
And the road to heaven is paved with golden stones. And as you walk on these golden stones, they rub off on your feet, and pretty soon you become gold. Oh, isn't that fun? My goodness sakes. I like the Cadillacs, you know. Remember, he used to have us all driving Cadillacs in heaven. That was kind of nice. So, a practitioner... Huh? You like to go?
I like the Mercedes.
Mercedes? Well, they're good, too. Yeah. It depends on which Mercedes you choose. Now, a practitioner first heals himself relative to the friend. Now, what does this mean to heal yourself relative to the friend? If you look with the eyes of a master, with the eyes of wholeness, with the eyes of Jesus, the eyes of God, whatever terms you want to use, you cannot see a problem in that person. Remember, Jesus, people came to Jesus and said, Jesus, heal me. And he says, yeah? Well, heal me. He says, what do you want? I'm the Christ. I can only see you perfect. Well, I've got a broken leg. Oh, you want two of them, you know? No, Jesus Christ, what the hell is wrong with you, you know? And that's what we think. And Jesus said, look, I am the Christ. I can only see you whole and perfect. I can only see you beautiful and wonderful. Is that what you want? Then it is done unto you according to your belief. But see, he could not see in anyone anything that was not right. You and I, as practitioners, we as the Christ child, we as God, cannot see in anyone anything except their wholeness and perfection, you see? And that is tough, because we went in to see Dwayne in the hospital, and everybody goes, oh, Dwayne, how are you, Dwayne? And I said, Dwayne, you old bastard, you're doing just great. I'm glad to see, Herb, how you talk as a minister. No, I'm talking your language. Now, Dwayne, get out of that bed. Dwayne, get on home. Now, stop this playing around. You're feeling sorry for yourself, and it doesn't work anymore. I don't accept that, because you're whole and perfect, Dwayne. You're whole and perfect. And Dwayne looked at me and says, go home, Herb, go home.
And long after, he went home, too.
Yeah, see, he was playing a little game. As we all do. See, when we go to the hospital, we're playing a little game. When we got anything. And I disdain movies that make fools out of women. How many of you have had a baby? Or more?
Well, we noticed the guys didn't raise their hands.
No, the guys didn't. All right. Did you scream and holler and stamp your feet as you were having each child?
Yes.
No.
You were told that that might happen. You were told that it might be painful. Now, you say, well, I had a lot of pain medicine, so I wouldn't have known, you know. Well, that's another story. But the thing is, you don't need to have pain. Who gave you the pain? Remember? Remember who it was?
Your memory.
Huh?
Your memory tells you.
The Bible said, you shall have children in pain. You shall work by the sweat of your brow to earn the food that you have children by pain. Now, who did that? Some mean old bastard who felt that he wanted to tell the world how to run itself. You know? No, really. You've got to read this book that I'm reading right now. I'll bring it along tomorrow. And in it tells how the Bible was actually written. And it's not meant in any negative sense. But it just shows you how it was written and how it was changed and changed and changed. And how when some scribes didn't agree with what was being said there, they changed it to what they wanted it to say. And who knew that they changed it? Because the next person came along and copied what they said. Interesting. And in the centuries after Jesus, people were hired to be scribes, and they did not have to know how to do anything but to sign their name. And they would sign their name, yes, I have received this document. They didn't know what it said. But you see, this went on for centuries that no one knew what was being said. And things were changed. And the councils of the Vatican are so vast and diverse that they put in what they wanted to put in and kept out what they didn't want to put in. They put in what they felt was going to support the way they thought Jesus should be, and they took out the things that they felt were not beneficial to supporting the development of a church. Now, they weren't mean or hateful, or they were not malicious in any way. They merely took the liberty, as a poet does and as a painter does, to paint it as he sees it, you know? Interesting things, isn't it? Okay, let's look at another point here. A minister shares with his congregation as a living example. Now, all of you have commented on that. A practitioner is true to himself and has fun in whatever he does. And the first 10 commandments appear in the minister's manual. Did you know that? In this book, the first 10 commandments that were thrown down and broken appear there. Okay. A singing church is not always well attended. Is that true? I'm sorry?
I don't know.
A singing church is very well attended.
Yeah.
People like a church that sings. Mm-hmm. People like it when you're singing in church and when you have joyous songs, when you do great things together. People like that.
Yeah.
It's a lot of fun. I've had a lot of churches, and the more songs we had, the better we liked it. I even got time for my talk in there.
Well, just like I told you, there's like 7 or 8 of us, 10 of us, driving all the way up Pennsylvania Lake just for the music on a Sunday. Coffee.
There you go.
Yeah, it rocks.
Tells you something. People who choose a church, people choose a church mostly because of the man in the pulpit.
Leaves us women out.
Hmm?
Leaves us women out.
Of the person in the pulpit. All right, so get with it. And don't be offended. I know you're not being offended, but don't even make a silly remark like that, because that makes other people who are not stable say, sure, they're only talking about the men. Hey, I would like each one of you to take the first chapter of Genesis and read it. And in the first chapter of Genesis, God said, "And let us create man and woman in our image." And man and woman were created in the image of God, were created they. First chapter. In the second chapter, the man is writing the book now. And so he writes the book and he says,
he claims it all.
He says, God created man, the best of his production. And then man needed a helpmeet. He needed somebody to push around. And so he took one of man's ribs and created woman. Now that's the second chapter. Now read it. Read it. And you'll be surprised, because in the first chapter, which is the metaphysical chapter of the entire Bible, it tells the story of creation in the most beautiful and most vivid terms and the most true terms, in the isness terms, in the absolute terms. Really quite exciting and quite lovely. Okay. We are interested in unlimited financial stability. Is that correct? It sure is. We're interested in unlimited financial stability. We don't go in.
You don't want to go broke.
We go, huh?
You don't want to go bankrupt.
No, we don't want to go bankrupt. But the thing, we have unlimited.
We don't want to think about it.
We don't even want to think about it.
Right.
We have unlimited financial. I am independently wealthy. I don't know where it comes from. And it comes from everywhere. But I'm independently wealthy. And wherever I go places and do things, you know. I was sitting at a birthday dinner in Zurich, Switzerland, with one at their 12 of our students. That's a nice number. And the guy next to me, Jorg, J-O-U-U-M-L-A-R-G, you know. He was the boyfriend of another one of our real good students. And he had this beautiful black sleeved shirt on, velvet black sleeved shirt. Looked really great on him. And I told him, "Jorg, wow, that shirt looks great on you. You are really handsome." And then I didn't say anything more. Talk. Next thing I know, it was hanging on the chair behind me. He had given it to me. You see, we never know where it's going to come from. And it's not just a matter that we compliment a person, but it's just a matter that we don't know. I had never thought of that. I was taking care of a lady who was sick in bed for, that is, I was there for 2 weeks while I was working with her, and I had one of her rooms, and I slept under this very wonderful coverlet. It was just so comfortable, so light, and yet it was warm. And this was in Switzerland with 5 feet of snow outside and everything, and it was just really nice. And I said to her, I said, gee, that's a terrific coverlet on that bed down there. I want to buy one of those before I leave town today, you know. And so she said, well, we'll send Sylvia out to buy it. And so Sylvia ran out and bought one. And I said, how much? Well, this is just a token for your being here, you know. Well, you hate to mention anything because people go buy it for you. But I'm not reserved like that. I'm independently wealthy. I'm independently wealthy. I'm sure.
You are worthy of your greatest good.
Thank you. And sir, dog, madam, their dog had a collar of a rope the size of this candle here. It went around the neck, you know, and it had a loop on the end like a choke collar. But about a third of the way down, there was a stopper on it. So when you had the dog on the collar, it would stop him, but it wouldn't choke him. And I looked everywhere to buy one of those things, but I haven't found it over there. If you ever see it advertised, let me know, will you? Because they are, I'm not telling him the size, and I tell him the size, and he'll buy one and send it to me, you know. But it's a golden retriever. But my good comes to me from so many different ways. I have one of my patients, students, friends, who is 80, and she's having a little sphincter trouble. You know what sphincters are? And this is the sphincter that keeps her from dribbling in her pants. And so I told her, I said, you know, they have a cushion that you put between your legs, and you squeeze this cushion to build up the sphincter muscle again. And I said, I'll find out where they sell one like that and get you one. Because that's a whole lot better than having to wear diapers and having to have the potty next to your bed all the time and stuff like that, to be in control. And it's just a matter of building that muscle up again that had not been paid attention to. And, you know, people say, hey, this is natural stuff. This is natural stuff. And this is good stuff. And this is not, you see, we say secular and sacred. Yeah? Is there such a thing as secular and sacred? It's all one. It's all one. Everything is divine. Everything is good. Everything is fantastic. Everything is glorious. And it works. Wherever I find beautiful illustrations of benefit for people, and I hear of people who can use something like that, I tell them right away. They say, well, who do? I have a student who has suffered for 3 years now with a tumor, and he's very unhappy about it. And I told him, I said, hey, your consciousness is just not handling this to release it, so go have it released, you know, have it popped out. And, no. And so now he has just heard about six doctors in six different countries, not America. He doesn't live here anyhow, but not America, who have a laser that they point it at the tumor, wherever it may be, and they dissolve it. They just dissolve it, and the tumor is gone. And I think to myself, my goodness, that's a good thing to know. That's a good thing to know. And there are six countries that they do it: Japan, China, Thailand, Malaysia, and some others, you know. I'm sorry?
I had it done right here at the U of A.
Well, there you go. He didn't even know that. But they just vaporize it, don't they?
Yep.
And it's gone. No pain, no sticking anything inside of your body, no invasion into your body.
No,
it's
invasion.
Just pop, like that. And was it, may I ask, terribly expensive? $20,000?
Yeah, it's pretty spending.
$20,000, $30,000?
But, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, but it's worth it.
And it does dissolve, but it does take time for it to dissolve.
In other words, it sets the dissolving action in process, and then in time it just stops having a reason to live.
Yes.
and goes away and runs away through the bloodstream. Mm-hmm.
Yes, but I have that done right here. I can do a bit.
And how long did you have to wait for it to continue to do its job?
Well, that was done in September, and it's not completely done yet, but very close.
It's going very quickly.
Yes.
Okay, good. So that's, you see, now these are things. Now, isn't it interesting? I visited a lady who was very sad with cancer. And I told the lady, I said, hey, this is a mental thing, you know. Of course not. But this is a mental thing. Now, do you want to release this? I said, now, I will give you several techniques. Right? Here's one technique. Just like this doctor in Texas, he and his wife, Stephanie is her name, and I forgot his name, last name. But anyhow, he was at Travis Air Force Base as their surgeon general there. And so he had Air Force pilots who had cancer of the throat. And he would go into each one of these Air Force pilots, and he would say to them, visualize your white corpuscles just gobbling up all the cancer cells, and they're gone. Now, he had a dozen men with cancer of the throat, and a dozen guys without cancer of the throat a short time after that. And he opened up his own clinic down in Texas and so forth, and he's doing just a great job. But now, hey, cool. And then I told her, I said, now, all you have to do is just visualize a stream of light going down through this experience and dissolving it and washing it away. I said, or buy yourself one of these baths and you put salt in, you know, and it's a beautiful salt bath, and it's like in a deprivation tank, you know, and you lay in there and then just visualize the cancer cells dissolving and floating away and being never seen again, you know, and that's worked. This has been done by people. And and then there are other techniques too. There are other techniques. And I could go on with these, but we're not here for that today. Remember, healing should be and always is spiritual. But if you have to keep the patient alive long enough to pray, then certainly give them whatever medicine is going to help them to stay alive and be with us another day, you know. Pray, day, play, may. So it works. It works. These are great things, and of course your illustration is outstanding. Mm-hmm. Now, why is it that you are so smart, that you're so superior to 2 million other people who are experiencing that and who don't go and have something done about it?
Because I know I'm God.
Now, did you give the right answer? Ooh-wee. That lady is on top of it, right? I tell you.
She got your number.
Yeah. She knows. Now, this is important. These things I'm saying and some of the rascal words that I use to get your attention are sometimes a little bit, you know, not good, but they do get your attention. And I'm used to working with a crew of old ladies at the ranch, and I have to get their attention. One of them is 89. And she is wonderful. She fell down and cracked her hip, and she had a spike put in it. And so she's up with her walker going around, and the doctor says, remember, there's an egg under your foot. Don't put your foot down until I tell you. You know, you can put your toe down, but you can't put your heel down, you know. And so she's going around just like nothing's wrong, helping set the table, doing all the things, and being just fantastic. But you see, she has a will to live. A will to live at 89? You bet. You bet. When she was 72, she saved the life of her mentor. Her mentor was living in a house that she was living in, and she was taking care of him there, and he was in his wheelchair. She went to the grocery store and came home, and the house was on fire. And she hauled him out of the house. And hauling him out of the house, she got third-degree burns, or terrible burns all over her body. He died. And they had to redo her. They had to replaster her. And from today, you couldn't tell it. She is just a fabulous woman with a will to live. And that will to live makes her a delight. She has a Jeep, a red Jeep. And she gets in that red Jeep, and she delivers day-old bakery to the people who can't get out of their houses, you know, to the shut-ins. You know what I mean? What a woman. See, this is a consciousness, this is an attitude, and this is what ministers have. They have fabulous attitudes for themselves first. Okay. A church does not have to say thank you for the contributions. That's true, but saying thank you encourages more. You know, it's up to you, but you don't have to. You think that these people could say thank you for the great contributions that are given to their charities or to their churches or to their organizations? Do you think Billy Graham could say thank you enough for the millions and millions and millions of dollars that are given to him to put on his TV shows? You know, fantastic. I'm not knocking the guy in the slightest. I mean, you know, he's running his program very well. God Unlimited Churches and whatever you, what are you calling your churches here?
Stairway of Life.
The Stairway of Life churches are state and federally tax exempt nonprofit groups or corporations. Ready? Okay. The Stairway of Life recommends that these having healing needs should see their medical doctors. Yes, no.
Yes.
Well, let's put it this way. This chick goes to see hers. He tells me what's wrong. I go home and heal it. So, yes, I see my MD.
The church never says, don't see your doctor.
That's right.
The church always, we're not Christian scientists. And we haven't got the guts to be that. If we had the guts to be Christian scientists, we'd be something fantastic. Because they are absolutist to the absolute degree. But anyhow, that's another story. We tell people if they feel they need a doctor, if they feel they need medicines, if they feel, go for it. But the program that we're teaching is so that you don't need it. So that you build in your consciousness this inner confidence within yourself where you don't need it. And that's the wonderful thing about it all. Okay, everyone is healed in a healing service. Well, if you are a practitioner and you are conducting a healing service and you do not see everyone healed in your healing service, quit. You're in the wrong business. If you are a practitioner, first you heal yourself. And there is no war to stop. There is peace on earth. There is no war. There is no healing that is needed. Jesus said, what do you want? What wouldst thou of me? You know? And so we, as the practitioner in the healing service, there is nothing to heal. People come in there with happy hearts and there's more happiness, you know. People come in there with whole bodies, have another whole body, you know. Be happy. And this is what it's all about. Now, seriously, when you have your healing stools here and you have people under your hands on the healing chair, you are not wiping garbage away from them or bad vibrations away from them. You are pouring your pure white light of love, your pure energy. That's why you're there. You're pouring your pure energy into that being, and you're saying, you are illumined in my love. You are surrounded in my love. You are encased in my love. You are whole and perfect in my love. You are allness that ever was, ever could be in my love. And Jesus didn't say, it's done because of me, Jesus. He said, it's done because of you. And so, each person who sits on this healing step, on this healing bench, is blessed, is uplifted, is illumined, is radiant by your vision of them. And they walk out of here leaving their crutches and their canes and their braces and their false teeth and what have you behind.
Oh, no.
You don't want I have a little old woman in Prairie du Chien, Wisconsin, where I had a newspaper, and I would, you know, go out and write newspaper features about people in my community, and she was 100 years old, so I went to interview her. And I said, to what do you owe your long life? She says, my bottle of hooch and my corncob pipe. She smoked her corncob pipe and she drank her corn liquor. And I said, surely there must be something more. She said, well, yes. She said, see? Yes, one tooth. It's a new tooth. And she says, before I die, I'm going to grow every one of my teeth back one at a time, one each year. A cool lady. A real cool lady. And to the last of my knowledge, she had two or three teeth coming in just fine. But you see, that's attitude. Now, why should she be able to do that and someone else not? Because it didn't mean something to somebody else. Because some of you wanted to hang on to your false teeth.
That's for sure. That's not paid for.
Well, come on now. If you had a mouthful of teeth and didn't need them anymore, you think you'd use them?
I have to go to the dentist, and I don't like dentists, so I'm not choosing that.
Hey. Oh. If you have perfect teeth, you don't need a dentist.
They are perfect.
Hey, Coolin. You're messing up my act.
We're going to take this on the road pretty
soon. Okay. Everyone is healed. Okay, ministers must be able to be heard while prayers are being said. True?
True.
If a minister can't be heard while a minister is praying, he should sit down. When a minister prays, you don't harangue people. Bow ear! You say, let us all sit in silence now and listen to that voice within that heals, uplifts, and directs us to all power and all peace and all reality that we are. Listen. You know, I'm going to tell you this out of pure modesty, but I'm going to tell this to you. Now recognize it's out of pure modesty. I put the Dial Healing Prayer on our free Dial Healing Prayer. You dial it free, it's a toll-free number in Campbell. And I have talked with many of the people who have listened to it because they call in otherwise and asked to talk to someone about prayer. And they say, is God still there? I had God speaking on the phone. It was God's voice. And they say, oh, that was you. Oh, yes, that was God's voice speaking. You know, isn't that wonderful? I mean, wouldn't you like to have people say that when they hear you talk, they hear God speaking? Wouldn't you like to have that be said of yourself? When you hear yourself speaking, it's God speaking? Yes. I tell you, that's quite a compliment. As I say, I have no no limits. There are limits to spiritual healing, and that's not true.
There are you said you have no limits.
Yeah, there are no limits to spiritual healing. At all healing meetings, ask for treatment requests. Now, if you don't ask for treatment requests, are the little cards that are listed in the book here, and you ask people, what is it that they would like to experience? And when you ask people what they'd like to experience, I'm not going to ask you a question because I'm afraid of what you're going to say. But and when you ask them, what is your problem? They say, I got a ooh. And I say, no. What is your problem? My problem is I want to experience more wholeness. I want to experience better health. I want to experience my magnificent health, you know. I want to experience my 2020 sight. I want to experience whatever you want to experience. You understand? You see, what wouldst thou of me? You want another broken leg? That'd be kind of ludicrous, wouldn't it? Be silly. But what you want is a whole and perfect leg. A whole and perfect. We have one of our students. She went in because her hip was bothering her. And so the doctor says, well, let's change the ball. And she said, oh. And the doctor said, hey, we do it all the time. No big deal. Let's just change the ball. So he went in and he took the old ball out, put the new ball in, and sent her home the next day. The next day. And she's walking on that the next day, and just as though it has always been there. As comfortable as can be. They did not do anything to the muscles or to the nerves or to the veins or to the arteries or to anything that were going through the hip where the ball was. But they just popped out the marble and put in a new marble, you know, one that wasn't going to be abrasive. Now, isn't that something? Isn't that amazing? Now, before she went in, she's, well, I think it's going to be all right. I think it's going to be good. I said, you know it's going to be good. I said, now, what do you really think is going to happen? Well, she's going to replace it, and I'm going to feel fine. I said, that's right. Now, you keep that in your thought. She went in there. She said to the nurses, you're going to replace this, and I'm going to be just fine. And she was 80 years old. And the nurses said, yes, my dear, yes, my, you know, that's terrible. They said, you're right, lady, you're right, you know. Instead of, yeah, but you'll understand, and when you have it done, you'll see what happens. You know, I thought, fire those nurses, you know. But no, she went in, she had it done, she came out, and the next day, she went home. And she walked by the nurse's place there, and she says, "Bye, ladies." And the ladies look, "What? You're going home already?" "Sure." "Well, most of the time we keep her here 2 or 3 days, but you're going home very late. Man, you are really something." And you know why? She goes out in the yard every day picking up wood for our fireplace. And she carries it because she can't drive the golf cart anymore because she has a tendency of not concentrating on the road. Something, and she runs off the road. I don't want her to hurt herself. So she's got to take it. We give her a coaster that she can use to bring the wood in, but she doesn't like that. So you know what a lift truck is? One of these little lift wagons that you take the refrigerator in the house with, you know? She takes that and piles it up with wood and hauls it up to the house. I mean, what a woman. What a woman. What a will to live. And she's just amazing. But you are too. It's all attitude. So, treatment reports as well as treatment requests are used at healing meetings. Yes. I've conducted many, many, many healing meetings where we've had them, and they've been extremely beneficial. To minister to a church of, should have your name in front of me here.
Stairway of Light.
To minister to a church, a church of Stairway of Light, the Stairway of Light, period. Is it Stairway of Light Church?
Learning Center.
Stairway of Light Learning Center. Stairway of Light Learning Center. To minister to the Stairway of Light Learning Center, one must be ordained by the Stairway of Light Learning Center Ministry. Huh? Yes. If you're going to preach what the Stairway of Light teaches, you should know
preach. It says
to minister.
And we all minister to each other. Every time we come together, we give rock.
Gene?
I'm talking about ministry, not preaching.
Gene?
Yes.
You have just found another Achilles heel. Thank you. And you're right. You're right. This is standard brand religious science stuff, unity stuff, Presbyterian Catholic stuff, where they want you to be aware of what they teach before you go out and do anything. And is there any person born on the face of the earth who is not a minister?
No.
Every single being on the face of the earth. Now, to what church are you ministering? Usually to your own, you know. Now, if you affiliate with some organization, then you take on whatever that organization teaches or agrees to, and that's fine. But you don't have to be ordained by them. I have 7 ordinations, and there may be some more I've forgotten about. One day, Mark and I were walking down the street. We had leased the property from Dr. Edmund Bordeaux Seke, who had the Essene Church in San Diego. And we rented his property. And we lived there for a number of years. And we attended some of his activities because he had some interesting talks about the teachings of Jesus that he had found in the archives of the Vatican. And he was doing research there. And so he said to my son, Mark, who was about 26 at the time, he said, "Mark, did I ordain you?" And Mark says, no. Mark was already ordained by us, you know. But, no, well, I ordained you as a minister of the Essene Church. And then he turned to my dog, Gus, my miniature schnauzer, he was very wise. Whenever he would sit down, he'd pray, you know, he'd close his paw, and he'd fly with me in the airplane, he'd pray like this. But anyhow, he says, "Have we ordained Gus yet?" Because Gus had just been bitten by a rattlesnake, he had a big bandage on his face and stuff, and he was very noticeable. And I said, "No." He said, "All right, Gus, I ordained you as a minister of the Essene Church." And so we sat in the front row there, and here we were in front of this whole group of his class, and he was teaching about the things, and Gus had the middle seat, right in the middle of the entire place, up in front. And then he says, "And today we ordained Mark Byerly and we ordained Gus Byerly, Reverend Gus Byerly." But you see, what did he recognize?
That God was in?
He recognized that Gus was already a minister. at every one of our religious services, you remember Gus?
Oh, yeah.
He would run around and jump in everybody's lap who had a medical problem or had a mental problem, and by the time he'd leave their lap, they felt wonderful. Remember that?
Oh, yeah. He was wonderful.
Yeah, he was just a little super dog. Just a great thing. But he was a minister, and you're right. You're right. And thank you, Jean. I needed that good swift kick in the slats that you should have given to me 40 years ago. The rite of ordination is the vow of self-dedication. Well, that's in the gist if you want to see it. Okay, anyone who achieves the title of minister is a balanced person. Interesting,
hi,
huh?
Girls.
Oh. Ciao, ciao. A letter of call invites a minister to work at headquarters. Now, these questions are written to see if you've read the book. Just to see if you've read the book. You don't really need to know that, but I want you to go through the book, as you might be ministers of ours, so that you know what's available to you. We have burials. We have the Jewish burial, because I've done Jewish burials. I've done Catholic burials. I've done Jewish weddings, Catholic weddings. I've done weddings for every... You did a Catholic wedding? That's right. And the father's name was Father Battle. He was assisting me in his church. It's quite interesting. And yeah, it was real. It was real. Okay. Now, the rest of this is something you may keep and look at as you wish.
Did you bring minister manuals or any books this time?
I brought some of the syllabuses here, okay. And then a few gists.
Okay.
This is our spring gist, just off the press, and it is the picture there is at our healing meeting in Mauer in Zurich in Switzerland. It's kind of fun. So you get it, don't you? Yeah, good. Mm-hmm. So if you get it, just pass it along. Others can have it then too. But now. Are there any questions of any of you that go into what we have talked about or what we have not talked about? Ray? Thank you. You're wonderful. Now, these are the syllabuses for taking the courses of the University of Healing. In 30 weeks, you can have your Bachelor of Philosophy. We are represented by the state of California, and we are approved by them, and we are, which is quite unusual for a metaphysical university. All the other metaphysical schools have not chosen to go the route we did. We had a problem. My associate wanted to join the Better Business Bureau, and so she called the Better Business Bureau and said, "We want to join." She said, "Fine, fill out the papers, send it in." We sent it in, and they said, "Well, you have to be approved by the state of California." And oh, okay, what do we do? Well, here's the papers. So they sent us the papers. We filled it in, sent it into the state of California. They said, "My goodness, you more than qualify for everything as a university here in the state of California, as a degree-giving university. But you can give non-academic degrees. You cannot give academic degrees because you don't give academic courses." And so we are now approved. It's inside the cover here where it tells about it. So it's really quite something.
So I'm legal, huh?
Hmm?
I'm legal, huh?
You always were legal, but now you're more legal. Yeah. And who was that girlfriend of yours, Carol something or other, who was over in Arizona or Nevada? She was at the university.
Oh, Carol Miner.
Carol Miner.
Carol. She changed her name to David, and I don't know where she
what?
She changed her name to Carol David.
Carol Miner was a flake, but she was a good girl. And she wanted everything for free. Remember? You remember very well. And she wanted everything for free. And so she took our course. And then she said she wanted to take the courses from the University of Arizona, was it? Nevada. Arizona, I think.
Yeah.
Because it's out of Phoenix. And so she wanted to take those courses. And so she wrote us down as her undergraduate course and other things. And that permitted her to go on taking graduate school courses, you know, and they paid for it. The state paid for her courses after the approval from taking our courses. And then Edith Mary Sanderson, one of our longtime students from way back in the 70s, She went to Pepperdine University, taking her graduate degrees in school food service. She was the director of Los Angeles School Food Service in Los Angeles and Long Beach and Minneapolis before that and so forth. And so she used all of the degrees that she had gained from us to back her up, to take those, and they're on her certificates of our degrees supporting her receiving her master's and her doctorate. And, you know, nice. And I said, send us copies. We'd like to have that in our records, you know, because, but we don't promote that because we are a non-academic organization. We are not interested in having you play the academic game, although I'm a very academician myself. I love liberal arts and things of that nature. So, aside from that, the programs are good. Now, I asked you if you had any questions, and you didn't. I didn't give you a chance to answer it. So, anybody with a question? Yes.
So, the new books that you are writing now, you said you have new books that are written, and they teach.
Absolute.
Right. Is that a new course as well?
It's the University of Philosophy, which is an adjudicated university. It's approved in every way, just like the University of Healing is. And the basic foundation books of each course are done, except for the doctoral. The doctoral only has about 18 lessons out of 30 done. It's tough writing those chapters, but maybe I'll have just 18 chapters. That's not bad either. But each one of these programs is so beautiful that all of our students who were living on campus, I had 18 of them living on campus working on it, and reading it and studying it as I was writing it, and it's in print already, and they just are thrilled with it, and they say, hurry up, now I have to write the required reading, I have to write the quizzes to go with each chapter, and things like that, so that it can be a finished program. But it takes time, and maybe a third of my year, every year, a third of the year, I'm traveling to, when I leave here, I'll go home and spend a week, and then I'll go to London, and I'll be there. They're opening a new house in Leicester that they bought for us, and I'll have to see what that looks like and see what it's all about. But we've got students there who are really working very hard. Then I'll go to Montebrea, where we'll have our six-day seminar on School of the Master, which we have every year there, very highly well-attended, super, just a really great thing. And then after that, then we'll have a mid-week program in Bern, and then we'll have a weekend program for parents and children on how parents and children can get along together and work as a harmonious team to get the most out of the children, allowing them to be all that they can be. So we'll have a weekend of that, which will be kind of exciting. And that'll be on disc and on tape and on the internet if it interests any of you. You were on the internet for 3-4 months because we didn't change the cover. But then I will go down to Nigeria, and I'll be in Nigeria for 3 weeks giving the seminar that I'm giving in Montebrea, and then I will be ordaining about 8 or 10 people, and we have about 12 new students, and we have about 8 new students, that are 8 old students who are graduating already. And then I'll come back home, and they want me in Canada, and then they want me to go over to Thailand, and over to Australia, and Taiwan, and wherever. And I let Ellen take care of all those things. I let her take care of all the financial aspects of it and all that stuff, because I don't want to know anything about it. I've got too much fun just preparing the mental thoughts on it. People call me up on the phone and say, Herb, what are you going to talk about? And I say, what seminar is this? And they say, well, the Happy Heart Healing. That's the Montebrea seminar. Oh, okay. Now, have you got a minute? Sure. So they sit on the phone, long distance in Switzerland. and I'm sitting there, and I type up 24 titles for 24 lectures, and they're done. And I say, now, here they are. And he sat there maybe about 10 minutes. And so, here they are. And I read it to him. He said, wow, wow, wow. You know, and that's great. Send it to me. You know? And so, Reverend Pamela here, she says, what questions shall we ask you on the television program? And so I didn't do it right away. And because I didn't do it right away, then it got off with other things that didn't get done right away. You know? And it came up. And I said, I better do it. So I did it, and I mailed it. Emailed it off to you. You got it. You did get it. Yes, you did. Didn't you? You showed it to me. I mean, I showed it to you.
You gave me a copy. And I've never saw it before.
Oh, then you don't know what I was speaking about.
Doesn't bother me. You
saw your schedule, but not your letter, your questions.
Oh, how about that? So on there, I made about 8 questions, and the questions. The last question was something like, why is it that we think we have to die? You know? And are there any incurable illnesses? And a few other questions like that, that she can ask me, you know. And we will have a lot of fun with them on our TV show that you'll be having for you here. So you can be watching for those things. They're kind of interesting, aren't they?
And it's at 6 o'clock Saturday night, and anyone wants to come down, you're welcome to come down and sit in an audience.
Yeah. And maybe, if you're good enough, and you think your thought well enough, they may want to do 2 or 3 shows right in a row, and have them with all you guys participating who come down. And the ministers of, what's the name of the group? I didn't understand that.
Stairway of Light.
Learning Center. Stairway of Light Learning Center. You see, say it, pronounce it, enunciate it in such beautiful terms. The Stairway of Light Learning Center.
The Stairway, I'm going to play Saturday night.
The Stairway of Light Learning Center.
The
light comes from within. The Stairway of Light Learning Center. And my Stairway of Light merges with your Stairway of Light, and our Stairways of Light merge with the Universal Stairways of Light, which we always are, and we are the allness of the isness in the now. Ooh, isn't that exciting? I tell you.
Awesome.
Almost?
Awesome.
Awesome. Beautiful word. Beautiful word. Awesome. Right? Ready? Ray Hernandez?
Yeah.
Right, Reverend Pamela?
Magnificent.
Richard?
For sure.
You know it. Now, Richard can hardly wait until he can get full time into this organization. And by full time, that means 24 hours a day. And he has decided that if this is going to be a 24-hour-a-day organization, he's going to conduct it out of his heart. And that's going to be the center and the circumference of all that he does. His ministry conducted out of his heart.
Based on my experience,
he already is.
That's right.
Well, I would accept your judgment, that's for sure.
It's the truth.
Do you?
I go with it.
You am? You am? Yeah, okay. Now, what could we do, and I don't mean me, except I will do it in consciousness with you, what could we do to take the Stairway of Light Learning Center and have it be broader in its scope, with each one of you operating aspects of it from your home or from wherever you want to, from the Access One studio or from anywhere you choose. We have a student in Zurich, and he has our courses completed, and he went to apply for an opening that they had at the Migros department stores, like Kmart, you know, only bigger. It's one of the biggies in Switzerland. And they have classes that they give for people. They pay a few dollars to come and attend the class. And the classes are on any subject that interests them, whether it's theater, philosophy, religion, psychology, positive thinking, or anything. Well, now, guess what he chose? Positive thinking. And so he went there and showed them his credentials, and they said, we'll try you out. So he's very charismatic, Stefan. Very outstanding young man. And my telephone doesn't sound that good. And so he gave his class, and his students raved about him so much. And he was just teaching what we taught. His students raved about that the store officers who were in charge of running that aspect of the store attended his classes. And they were so thrilled with it, they asked him if he would do it in other stores, and if he would do it regularly. And he said, sure. So he goes over to this store and presents these lectures. Now he wants to look for a broader scope. So now he's going to go to the organization of Swiss organizations. And he's going to go to them, and he's going to present himself as a public speaker on positive thinking to present with Migros as his background, you know, and us and so on. And so I'm sure he'll find many possibilities. But you see, the outreach that you can do and make a living in doing your work as a minister here. Yes, love.
I have a question regarding our ministry.
You want to talk loud now?
I have a question regarding our ministry as ministers. How do we minister to people? For example, how can I minister to someone who is going through depression when I'm going through depression myself?
That's ideal. Mm-hmm. It's ideal. You look at yourself and you say, I am going through depression. So, what must you say to yourself, a positive thinker, knowing that you're going through depression, what must you say to yourself? I am balanced. Right? You must say that to yourself, or else you will continue depression. I am not balanced. I am not balanced. I am not balanced. I'm going through depression. I'm not balanced. Oh my goodness, can we put on a show, you know? But stop it and say, I am balanced. 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 When you come home at night, before you lay your head on the pillow, or when you lay your head on the pillow, say, peace. And then drift off to sleep. Peace. Peace. Balance. Peace. Okay, now, when you are dealing with one of your people who is having a need for balance, you say to them, I surround you with my pure balance. I see you surrounded with your pure balance. Now, you may say for yourself, if you have a relationship in which you talk, do you talk? Mm-hmm. Okay. Then you can say to yourself, I am balanced. I am balanced. I am balanced. I am balanced. Again and again and again. I feel relaxed. I feel peaceful. You see, then all the tension, all the anxiety, all of those things, the frustrations that drive you up the wall, they cease to have any power, and balance takes over. Now, if you really want to be balanced, then you will do that. If you don't, then you won't. I teach the energy massage, and you people here in this wonderful church talk energy, energy, energy until it comes right out your ears, but you don't practice it. You don't practice. You don't realize that your words are the powerhouse of the universe of energy. You don't realize, you go out here with these people sitting on this bench and you say, away with you stinky old germs and you stinky old things that are disturbing them, and in with the good stuff and out with the bad. don't do that. You got pure energy. Yeah, this here cannot send anything away. It can only empower. So you say, I surround you with my pure white light of love. I enfold you with my love. My love is your healing balm. You accept it as you wish, but I see you whole and perfect. I see you fantastic. It's done for me, and that's all that matters. Then, your fingertips, they radiate so much energy and so much power. If you were to hold them over your head and really tune in and quiet your very anxious mind, you would feel heat and cold. You would feel all those things. And then, when you go to bed at night, before you go to bed, before you go to sleep, if you're alone, it's all the better. But if you're alone, you can be naked, then you take your hands, and you don't touch yourself. You take your hand above your skin, just above your skin, maybe just a hair's breadth, and just all over and say, I love you, I love you, I love you, I love you, I like you, I like you, I like you. And oh, do you feel good? Oh, do you feel good? You tingle with energy. And wherever there's a pain, it's gone. Wherever there was an anxiety, it's gone. Wherever there's an ache, it's gone. I guarantee you. And when you say, I love you, 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 this is the energy massage. And do it to your whole body. Do it, and then roll over and do it on your back, and stand up or sit down or whatever you want to do. But if you do it with your clothes on, that's okay too. But you see, you have a mental image. The clothes is keeping part of the energy from getting through to you, to your skin, you know what I mean? So, but your naked body, and you're alone. You don't have anybody giggling at you and laughing at you and so forth, wishing they could do it too. But you see, and don't let anybody else do it. You don't want anybody else's energy. You want only yours. So you're exchanging energy with yourself, with your divinity, with your reality, with your perfection. And as you go over your body, your whole body comes alive. And if you've had a sore throat, it's gone. If you had trouble with your eyes, it's gone. Wow. Really, Herb? Yeah, sure, try it. Try it. But be consistent. Be consistent. Remember? Remember how quickly you learned 2 times 2 is 4? Remember? 2 times 2 is 4, 2 times 2 is 4, 2 times 2 is 4, 2 times 2 is 4. You didn't need to learn the whole mathematics table. Just 2 times 2 is 4. And the minute that somehow you believed that 2 times 2 is 4, you believed the whole mathematics table. You believed the whole multiplication table. You believed everything in mathematics because you came to the realization 2 times 2 is 4. When you come to the realization that I love you, 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 and your body says, thank you. Where have you been all my life? You know, I was waiting for this energy massage. I love you, I love you, I love you. And really, go over your genitals, go over your breasts, go over your shoulders, go over your chest, go over your hair, go over everything about you. There's nothing sexual about it. There's nothing erotic about it. It is the purest of energy. In your tiny finger, you have 10 to the 99th power of atoms. It's just the tiniest tip of your finger. And each atom is an atom bomb. Each atom has so much power in it. And that power is just waiting for you to distribute it under control over your body as the energy massage for healing, for wholeness. Now, when you do the healing program that you all surely do, when you have someone sitting on the healing stool, remember, if Jesus said, it's done unto you according to your belief, you better believe that it's not you who's doing it. It's them. It's their belief. You have to somehow encourage them to realize that they're doing it to themselves. They did it to themselves to make themselves sick and unhappy. They do it to themselves to make themselves well. And so they change their thought about themselves. Oh, I feel so good. I feel whole. And what did you do to me? Oh, you did something good to me. Oh, you're wonderful. There's a woman in Switzerland, lovely lady. She was asking some heavy questions. And we were at lunch at a friend's house. And so I got up from the table to do something. And then I came back to the table. And as I came back to the table, I put my hand over her head like this for a few minutes while I was talking to her. And I didn't say anything. And then she went home. And she wrote me a letter. And she says, Dr. Barney, I feel hot spots all over my head. I feel hot spots just sort of floating around my head. They're not bad. And you know, but they're hotspots, and I know there's something going on there. What's going on there? What did you do when you had your hand over my head? And I said, I merely enlivened the energy that you were ready to use. Now, it's up to you to make that hotspot all over you. A blanket that covers you with your own magnificence and goodness and wholeness and purity. And that's what it is. You know, we should have it like we have it in a dentist's office. No cellular phones are allowed to be turned on in the dentist's office. Because it's hard to shut them off sometimes, you know. But do you understand?
Okay.
You understand? You are an energy house. You are a powerhouse. On the way down here, this thing here was radiating so much energy, telling me so many of her dreams, telling me so many of her desires, and so much of her imagination, so much of her expectation, and so much of the things that she's got in mind to do, that I thought the car was going to drive by itself, you know?
It usually does.
It usually does. But you see, this is what energy does. Now, you want that energy in your control, because you can have the energy out of your control where you don't know how to handle it, and you can be afraid of it, and you can run. I had a little boy in Switzerland again. His father was a medical doctor and his mother was a painter, and she was a very serious Spanish type painter of black and reds. And so the little boy, they had two kids, and one little boy had a black cloud that was always hanging over his mind. And so he couldn't go to school, he couldn't do anything. The other boy, normal, no problem. So we worked with the little boy, Ellen and I. She translated as I talked to him. And after about a week or so, we got the cloud to go away, and he didn't have the cloud anymore. And everything was just perfect. He felt just wonderful, he felt just good. And then he went to school. And the children in school ignored him because they remembered how he was with the black cloud. And they didn't want to fool with him because he was a tough little guy with a black cloud. And his mother and father treated him that way too. And his brother treated him that way too, because they remembered him when. You know, like people have mental breakdowns and then they come home and they try to act normal, and the family doesn't let them act normal. They act normal, but the family doesn't. Family needs to go to the mental hospital, I tell you. So the thing is, he let the cloud come back. And we were called in. I said, okay, why did you let the cloud come back? He was my only friend, or he is my only friend. The black cloud is the only person that would let him play with him. Now, you see, we don't need these things, even as children. And I was in another home, the same type of situation in Switzerland, in Italy, the Italian part. And the woman asked me to give her house a blessing. And so I went through every nook and cranny and blessed the whole place and so on. And the little boy said, I'm having trouble sleeping. And I let it pass because I wasn't paying attention right then. And so we went into his room. And over his dresser was a picture his mother had bought of the devil bargaining for the soul of somebody in Hades, you know. In the kid's room. The kid's 10 years old, baby, you know. And the kid can't sleep. You wonder why. And so I told the mother, I said, take that picture and destroy it, get rid of it. Don't ever bring it back in your house again. And you'll see that everything will fall into place. Well, I paid so much for it. I said, I don't care what you do with it. Is your son's health worth more than the picture or whatever? And so she got rid of the picture. And that very night, her son had his first good sleep. But you see, those things, they're mental images. They can really be destructive to us. They can really mess us up. And yes, even with you in depression, you can help others in depression. Didn't think I was coming around to that answer, did you? But you don't have depression because you say, I am balanced. And then as you deal with another person, you don't see them having a depression. You see them in balance, or else you don't need to see them. They can do their depression alone. You know what I mean? So you just see them in balance just like you see yourself in balance. That's why they came to you. Because they look at you and they see a balanced person. They wouldn't come to you if they saw a depressed person.
They see you balanced. They don't see you unbalanced.
True? Okay, now, we have these two questions, so is there any other one? Is it time to go home? Yes? No questions? Okay. What comes tomorrow? We have...
tomorrow night at the house, doors open at 5:30, and you can talk while I finish the lasagna and lasagna and salad. And I don't have bread. If anybody wants garlic bread, you're going to have to bring it.
I can bring something.
Okay.
Now, if you have any questions on any subject, it doesn't matter what the subject is, as you can well understand, with the squeezing for the sphincter muscles and what have you. It doesn't matter. We'll cover it with respect and honor.
Yes.
And those are serious things for a person who's going through that.
Yes. Yeah.
Can you imagine if you had that problem and had to wear diapers or wear a catheter or something like that? Wouldn't that be rough? Oh, my goodness sakes. I have a brother-in-law who had an operation on his anus, whatever that is, and so he has to have a bag there, a colostomy bag, because he can't do normal things, and he doesn't want to go anyplace, you know. And I tell him, hey, don't let that bother you. You are what you are. And if you have to go to the bathroom and it goes all of a sudden, then just say, excuse me, and everybody knows what you're doing, and they say, I bless you, and I'm so thankful I don't have that, you know. You go in my love. And, hey, don't let it worry you. I am peace. I am balance. I am happiness. And you're wonderful. Let's close our eyes for a moment. We have the opportunity of going to the divine within ourselves and speaking with the divine within ourselves and listening to the divine within ourselves. We can play the game of Miss Ramtha, who has somebody speak through her, saying words that she herself would have said. But she needs to have this excuse so that she can speak because she's afraid to do it herself. Well, we're all like this Miss Ramtha. We want to throw that Ramtha right out the window and let our real self shine forth and come through. We don't need to have anyone speak through us. Jesus doesn't have to speak through us. If Jesus does, fantastic. But don't look for it. Don't worry about it. If you have that gift, and the word gift is a Greek word meaning charisma, if you have that gift that someone else speaks through you, just make sure it's Jesus on his good days and not Jesus on his bad days. Did Jesus ever have a bad day? No. So don't worry about it. If the divine speaks through you and uses other voices and other names, so be it. But train the divine in you to not need those things, to speak directly through you, to you, for you, of you, by you, and be itself in you. For there is only one God, and that God is present in each of us. There is only one mind and one power, and that is present in each of us. And each of us have been every experience that ever was, will be, ever could be, and we are that experience right now. So let's enjoy it, and let's say, I am that I am, and know that it is true now and forevermore. I love you, I love you, I love you.